I want to talk to you about the Rebbe Rashab. Tell you some stories about the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab's yard site is tonight. The Rebbe Rashab passed away on Beis Nissen, Tav Resh Pei. Beis Nissen in the year 1920. The story of the Rebbe Rashab, the story of how the Rebbe Rashab passed away, is a story unto itself. It's a truly amazing story, and I'm going to begin the story a few years before he passed away. The Rebbe Rashab passed away in 1920. In 1910, they were doing remont. They were doing repairs. They were doing expansion in Lubavitch. It was already Tafresh Ayin Aleph. It was the new Hebrew year. It was 5,671, but the English year was still 1910. And they were expanding the Bismedrish. So when it came Yom Tif, they didn't have the regular accommodation. So they used what they used to call in those days the Kleinim Zal. In Lubavitch there were two shuls, a larger shul and a smaller shul. The larger shul was being repaired, so they used the smaller shul. Unbeknownst to the Hasidim who set up the whole Fabrengen, they put the Rebbe Rashab's chair in the same spot where his father's Tahareh, the Rebbe Marash's Tahareh, had taken place. The Rebbe Marash had passed away almost 30 years before, and they did his Tahareh in the small Zal. And they put the Rebbe Rashab's chair down in the very, very spot where his father's Tahareh had taken place. As soon as the Rebbe Rashab walked into the Fabrengen, this is Simchas Torah, Tov, Reish, Ayin Aleph, almost 10 years before he passes away. He sees where they put his feet, immediately he becomes very, very emotional. And the Fabrengen was part of this world. There are records from different Chassidim, from Fola Khan and from Yudel Chitrik and from Perlov, who were there. Rabbi Jacobs writes about it also. It was an unforgettable Fabrengen. The Rebbe Rashab spoke with his whole neshama about his father and how much he loved his father and how much he missed his father. It was unbelievably emotional. And he kept looking at the Elter Chassidim, and he asked them if they remembered his father. You remember my father? I know you saw him, but did you know my father? He was very, very emotional. He cried a lot. And they were worried about his health. They were very, very worried about his health, because he was getting very, very emotional. The Rebbe Rashab was not the healthiest man. And they were afraid that it would affect his heart adversely. So the previous Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, said to the Rebbe Rashab, maybe we should stop the Fabrik. The Rebbe Rashab said, Simchas Torah, it's not the Fabrengen. Simchas Torah, the Fabrengen is going on. So when they really, really, really decided that the Fabrengen has to stop, they used the one weapon that they knew would work. The Rebbe's mother. The Rebbe Tzindifke was called, summoned. She would pass away 3 years after. She was already probably 80 years old at this point. And they told her that the Rebbe's Fabrengen, and he's reminiscing about the Rebbe Marash, she's getting very, very, very emotional, and it would be a good idea that the Fabrengen should be stopped. So she walked into the Fabrengen. As soon as she walks into the Fabrengen, the Rebbe gets up with his mother. Of course, when the Rebbe gets up, everybody else gets up. And she walks over to him, and the Rebbe Rashab, with the greatest kibbutz of aim, is talking to his mother. And she says to him, Efshizol machana hefzik. Maybe we should make an interruption. He says, why? It's Simchas Torah, for bringing with Chassidim. So she says to him, Did is Nitzkut. If you speak Yiddish, you'll appreciate this more. Did is Nitzkut. Did is Nitzkut means you're not well. You're exerting yourself too much. You don't feel well. But Did is Nitzkut in Yiddish could mean that you're not feeling well. And it could also mean that your life is miserable. You don't have a good lot. You didn't get a good card, you know. So she said to her son that Rebbe, "Did is Nitzkut means you're not feeling well right now." And he responds immediately, "Mir is Nitzkut. Mir is good. Mir is gar gut. Halavai zo Yosef Yitzchok zayin azay gut. I don't have it good. I have it good. I have it very good. Halavai my son should have it so good." This is 9.5 years before his Histalkus. At the time, it was just a off the cuff remark. It's pretty awesome. If you heard those words, you need to tremble. And we all know the history. Yosef Yitzchok didn't have it so good like that Rebbe Rashab. It happened. That's something. In 19 14, as you all know, World War I started. World War I started, the Germans had initially great successes, right? They entered Russia, they entered France, and they were very, very successful. I want you to know something. The Rebbe Rashab had a deep, deep, deep hatred for the Germans. Atifasine. The Rebbe Rashab says, it's not possible to hate more than I hate Wilhelm, the German Kaiser, who started World War I. At the Frank Hatzimus Moses. And when you read about it, it's exactly the same hatred that the Alter Rebbe had for Napoleon exactly 100 years before. 101 years to be exact. Right? The war, Napoleon was Ayin Beis, Ayin Gimel, 1812, and now you're talking 1914. The whole story of the Rebbe Rashab and Kaiser Wilhelm is the same as the Alter Rebbe and Napoleon, with the opposite outcome. Napoleon lost, and the Alter Rebbe remained in Lajna. The Germans lost World War I, but the world changed. The Rebbe Rashab never went back to Lubavitch. Things changed, as I'll explain to you momentarily. The Rebbe Rashab had this deep-seated hatred for the Germans. He hated them in his mother. The Friedrich Ebert once told the following story, that in 1906 or 1907, right, this is 6 or 7 years before World War I, he and the Rebbe Rashab were in Würzburg in Germany. And they heard that the German Kaiser was going to speak. So the Rebbe Rashab said to Friedrich Ebert, come, let's go. So they went to a location where there was hundreds, thousands of people gathered in a big outdoor amphitheater, and Wilhelm was coming to speak. Now, what are the chances of noticing two Jews in a crowd of thousands? Now, of course, they were dressed Eastern European, and this was Western Europe, but nevertheless, Wilhelm gets up on the stage, he looks around, he spots the Rebbe immediately. He turns to one of his advisors, and he says something, and they both laugh. 5 minutes later, the Rebbe Rashab is approached, and he asks to leave before the speech. This is a true story. The Friedrich Rebbe tells the story himself. And when the Rebbe Rashab walks away, he turns to the Friedrich Rebbe, and he says, Er hat schon Pläne für eine ganze Milchung. He has all the plans for a war, for a complete war. This is 1906. This is 7 or 8 years before World War I. And the Rebbe Rashab hated him. The Rebbe Rashab saw him mamish. You know, he saw Hitler in him. He saw everything evil in this German Kaiser. But there's another story which is even very, more compelling, or almost more compelling than this story, I don't know, but it's also compelling. There were in one of these places in Germany, I don't know if it was Berlin or Würzburg or someplace else, there was a private park that was exclusive. It was available only to nobility and to royalty, to the upper class. And the Rebbe Rashab was walking with the Friedrich Rebbe, and they come to the gate of this very exclusive park. And the Rebbe Rashab says to Friedrich Rebbe, they're standing by the gate and they're looking inside, Ich will sehr gewalt da reingehen. I really would like to enter. So the Friedrich Rebbe, his father, wants that. So for money, you can accomplish anything, any place in the world, pretty much. The only question of how much. He gives the guard a generous bribe. The guard is, of course, very pleased. He lets them in, and he gives them a tour. And this beautiful park, and there are these villas, these like little homes that are privately owned. And he shows them who each villa belongs to. It belongs to the Secretary of State, this belongs to the, you know, to the, the head of the army and so forth. And this is Wilhelm's private suite. So the Rebbe Rashab says to Friedrich Rebbe, Ich will sehr gewalt da reingehen. I really want to go in. So for money, he gives him another bribe, and he opens up the door. He lets him into Wilhelm's little villa. The Rebbe Rashab walks in, and he sits down on Wilhelm's chair. And he says, a klubenstuhl. It's a smart throne. Rebbe Rashab felt the Germans are not, I mean, unfortunately the Germans are not stupid. It's a good question, what's worse, cruel or stupid? And sometimes stupid is worse than cruel, but, I mean, Germans were, they used all their chokhmah for Lahore. And the Rebbe Rashab took a piece of Wilhelm's stationery, and he wrote a Maimach Sidus sitting in Wilhelm's chair, using his stationery, and he took it with him. And upon him, this was a bira, this was a way of, so to speak, conquering. He sat in his chair and wrote Chassidus with his pen on his stationery, and he took it with him. In any case, so the Rebbe Rashab saw the evil of this German Kaiser years before World War I. The Rebbe Rashab said once to Friedrich Rebbe, He said the Französen seine Balletteife, the Deutsche seine Apokurse. He said the French are pleasure seekers, the Germans are Apokurse. I don't have to translate Apokurse, right? It's a fine, he hated them. When World War I started, it was whatever, it was the summertime, and the Eber HaShab says, I am not going to be under German occupation for 1 second. Just like the Alter Rebbe, right? Many people remained under the occupation. The Alter Rebbe ran away from Napoleon. He didn't want to be under Napoleonic rule for a minute. The Eber HaShab packed his bags and he left. He left Lubavitch. The yeshiva remained, the svarim remained, they continued learning. In other words, World War I was not World War II. The Germans were not treating Jewish people in World War I as they did in World War II. But the Rebbe Rashab said, I hate him. He is klipa. He is the embodiment of everything evil. I don't want to be under his jurisdiction for 1 minute. And he left. The plan was that he would return to Lubavitch when the war ended. But when he got into the wagon and they rode out of Lubavitch, he said, for 101 years Lubavitch was the capital of Chassidus, and now Lubavitch is calling into Golis. He knew this was a one-way trip. He knew. As the war wore on and ended, Lubavitch collapsed. In 1918, the last Bochum left Lubavitch. All the Rebbe Rashab's Sforim were shipped to Moscow, which at that time was on the other side of a border. And those of the Sforim that were still trying to retrieve, the Rebbe Rashab never got his Sforim back. And the Rebbe Rashab moved to the city of Rostov. Rostov, if you look at a map, is very far south of Russia. It's very far south. And he opened up shop in an apartment building. Okay, the Rebbe Rashab got himself a very, very comfortable, large apartment. But it was not Lubavitch. You know, Lubavitch was a little village where you didn't have a house. You had an estate, you had a few acres. Now he's living in an apartment building. You understand, if he had one apartment, he had a different apartment. Upstairs, downstairs, they had neighbors. You know, neighbors. Like, you have neighbors and I have neighbors. The Rebbe Rashab had neighbors. And they had fabrengas and neighbors used to complain and call the police. And the Rebbe Rashab knew that he's not returning. He knew that he's not going back to Lubavitch. In fact, in 1918, word came to the Rebbe that there was a fire. And his house and the Bismedish, everything burned to the ground. So his Rebbetzin said to someone who was close to the family that we just got word that there was a fire. And everything that we own burned to the ground, or mezainen from them tzefriden. We're happy about it. Rebbe Rashab didn't want other people living in his dide, the Marash dide, burnt it, nothing left. There's nothing left of the Rebbe's homes in Lubavitch, just the ground. And the Rebbe Rashab did a lot of very interesting things. He built a mikveh, designed a mikveh. You see, in the shtetl, in the village, he didn't have to design a mikveh, because every village was built on a river. And the river is a mikveh. Sometimes you can tell you about the river itself, sometimes you have to build a little pit near the mikveh, sometimes you have to heat it up, but they, believe me, it wasn't so hygienic. But nevertheless, in a city, you don't have access to a river. So the Rebbe Rashab designed a mikveh from rainwater. All our mikvehs today are rainwater mikvehs, as opposed to from mayonis, fountains, rivers. They're much more, they're complicated, halachas are much, much more complicated, and the Rebbe Rashab designed the mikveh. He put himself into it, he studied materials, different types of cement and different types of rubber, what is kosher, what is not kosher. The Eber HaShab immersed himself in all kinds of physical things to design a kosher mikveh, and this is the mikveh that we Lubavitchers today make. It's based on this mikveh of the Eber HaShab. And what's amazing is that in the last 10 years they purchased that house that the Eber HaShab lived in the 1910s, and in the basement where the mikveh was, there was cement. They uncovered the cement. And not only was the mikveh there, the water was still in the mikveh. Not the boil where you title, but the water from the rainwater mikveh, it was put there before communism, and it was still there after the death of communism. It's a moidindikig in it. The water survived 80 years. The water from the boil was there.
Past 10 years or so?
Yes. They bought the house. And I'll tell you some more details. The water is still in the pit. It's an amazing, an absolutely remarkable.
Is it not natural?
What natural?
Is it not natural that the water should still be there?
Well, the fact that anything of the mikveh was left 80 years ago. It's a long time, 80 years. Yeah, you're right. If you leave water in a hole and you just cover it, it's going to stay there. But the fact that they left it there, The phenomena is, the fact of the matter is, that mikveh was built before Soviet Union, and it was there after the death of Soviet Union. That's how I personally, I think it's a remarkable thing. And he lived in this house in Rostov. In the meantime, you know, the world was brewing a revolution. The revolution started in Leningrad, which is in the north, it's the top of Russia. The Rebbe is living at the bottom of Russia. And the revolution is advancing. And of course you all know the story, the Hurrah story, you know the Hurrah story, right? The Hurrah story is based on the Rebbe Rashab telling people to vote. The Rebbe Rashab hated the communists, almost as much as he hated the Germans. And there was a small window of democracy, and the Rebbe Rashab said everybody has to go vote, because it was an opportunity to establish a government which would give people real rights and freedom back of religion. But of course it failed. And in the winter of 1920, the Bolsheviks came to Rostov. They entered the city, they killed a lot of people, they displaced everybody who was wealthy, the bourgeois, they called them, the upper class, they took away their wealth, and took away their homes, took away their businesses, and they did what they did, you know, with all the brutality and cruelty, and it was a very difficult time. And there was martial law. In other words, the streets were run by the military, not by a civilian militia, but by the police, by the army. If you didn't follow the rules, they shot you. Not complicated. Rule number one, there's a curfew. You can't be out after a certain hour of the night. Rule number two, you're not allowed to gather in large groups of people. Rule number three, you're not allowed to sell and drink alcohol. Rule number four, you're not allowed to collect money. Okay? Come put him. Fabrengen is at night, after the curfew. People are gathering. They're going to drink mashke, and they're going to collect money. Alafir aveda, so they are anger packed in him. So Fabrengen begins very, very subdued, very, very, very low-key, very depressed. And it goes on for a few hours. The Rashab says, "Amayin, there's siches." They're humming, they're whispering. They don't want to bother the neighbors. You understand? The neighbors shouldn't call the police.
What year is this?
This is 1920, the beginning of 1920, March 1920. This is Purim. Suddenly, around midnight, the Rebbe Rashab turns from Friedrich and Rebbe, and he says to Friedrich and Rebbe, "Simchas peira al mir zich of dem nir gericht." Simchas Torah, we didn't vision, we didn't see this. Ich will as yet so sein with Simchas Torah. I want that now we should have Simchas Torah. Now, a Rebbe, Rosh Hashanah, and Simchas Torah sees the whole year. The fact that the Rebbe Rashab says that he doesn't see is very, that he didn't see is very significant. He said something, and we didn't see this, so it didn't happen. It doesn't exist. In this house, this is not happening. He says, we're going to be Simchas Torah. And the Friedrich Rebbe says, Tate, Tukuch Nefesh. He can't even say what they could do. And the Rebbe Rashab said, now it's Simchas Torah. And he told the student to sing loud, to go out and call more people, to drink mashke, and to collect money. The Rebbe Rashab put him, had what was called Kupas Rabbeinu. Kupas Rabbeinu was stuck in the people gave al daite. The money was given to the Rebbe Rashab. He was free to do with the money as he wished. You trusted him that he did good things with it, which was a pretty good investment. And they made noise. Their neighbors woke up. Called the cops, and they came in. Now, if you watch the Living Torah, in one of the Living Torahs of one of these weeks, they show a clip that this guy Haber says that his father was a kid at this Fabrengen, and when the Friedrich Rebbe was nervous about they're going to come in, so the Rebbe Rashab said, "Mir velm zei zen und zei velm uns nit zen. We'll see them and they won't see us." This is what he writes, but in other sources it says different things. What happened was, they walked into the Fabrengen, two KGB people. It wasn't called the KGB at that point. It was called the NKVD, or the Chekoye. They kept changing names. What happened was, they were very brutal, and they would do terrible things. So when it would leak out of Russia, when the Western papers would say that the secret police of Russia is doing terrible things, so Russia would make a big announcement, and they're doing reformation, and they would change the name and continue doing the same practices. And then when they got word, they would change the name again. The name kept on changing. It was exactly the same thing. They walked in and they stood opposite the Rebbe. And the Rebbe Rashab started to curse them. He said, "I hate them. I hate
and
them." In Yiddish. And they were all Jews who spoke Yiddish. They were yeshiva bachrim. They knew exactly what he's saying. They're standing and looking at him. And he's cursing them. I'll turn it off. He's letting them know that in his world they're the personification of evil, He says, in my world they don't exist. They're not a Matthias. They're Heder. They're just pure evil. And he's carrying on and on. And Ebre Shabbos Mevatel them. And Bettel Rifkin, who wrote an account of the Fabrian, says their faces are turning red and white and pink and green. He's pushing, mopping the floor with them. And everybody in the room is listening to this. First of all, it was obviously, nobody could have anticipated then how bad they were going to be. And the Rebbe Rashab right away appreciated this is terrible. These are bad, this is a bad, bad, bad idea. And it's a Yisholt, and he cursed in every imaginable way. People, of course, were very afraid for the Rebbe. And every time the Tzaddik Rebbe would say to his father that maybe he should, so to speak, relax, there was nothing to talk about. Now it's Simchas Torah, I'm afraid of nothing and anybody. And as he's talking about them, he finally says, they don't exist. They're not real. They're a figment of people's imagination. There's no truth to them whatsoever. And then he says, finally, Ich will sagen, Chassidus, und den ganzen ist Wattel werden. I'll speak Chassidus, and they completely disappear. And he says, the Maimer Reishis Goyim Amalek, the last, in the most famous Maimer that Rebbe Rashab, which talks about the erasure of Amalek and how Amalek is a non-Matthias, the whole thing is a lie. Anyway, they leave. And nothing happens. It's a mess. You would expect that the next morning they would come and arrest the Rebbe for counter-revolutionary activities, for revolution against revolution. Nothing happened. This was Purim. And it was an unbelievable event. The Rebbe Rashab he's a tzaddik gomor, a perfect tzaddik, who's sensitive to Kedusha and Klipa like nobody else, and he sensed right away, this is Ra Sheberat, pure evil. This was Thursday night. Sunday morning, the Rebbe Rashab calls. Oh wait, I forgot to tell you a very important thing. He said a lot of different things, but one of the things that he said, and I think he said it more than once, was, Ich ken mitzein nidzayin in enim. I cannot live with them. I cannot cohabit. I can't be with these people. Sunday morning, he called him one of his gaboyim, and he sent him to another city to bring him svarim. The Rebbe Rashab had a huge library, but as I explained to you earlier, his library was in Moscow, and he was in a stud. He had no access to his library. And he locked himself in his room for a week. We now know that he wrote his will. He was a perfectly healthy man. Sahak was 59 years old. He wrote his will. It took him a week to write a will. The Rebbe Rashab's will has never been published. It's very, very long and very scholarly. It's a very lumdish will. One page of the will is published, which is a few details about the previous Rebbe's inyanim, about saying chassidus and strengthening tem chetmimim and so forth. A week he's writing his will, a whole week. He finishes on Friday. Friday night he gets sick. 2:00 in the morning, Bar Rifkin says, I get up and I see Chana, one of the Rebbe's feeding Rebbe's daughters, walking with a glass of tea. As I ask her where you're going, he says, there's Eidah Filth Mishkut.
Who's writing this?
Bettel Rifkin. He wrote a book called Ashkafta de Rebbe, where he goes through this whole story blow by blow in much more detail than I'm giving you. It's a whole book. The Rebbe in the Chomadina, the Tzaddik Rebbe's wife, had typhus. She was very sick. And he went to see her. He went to Menachem Chela. And when the Rebbe got sick, people were immediately afraid that he Chas Hashem caught it. Typhus is very contagious. And the Rebbe Rashab, throughout his illness, kept on asking, do I have typhus? He knew he was going. He planned it. Rebbe Rashab wrote his own ticket. But he didn't want to pass certain times. So Friday night he didn't feel well. Right? So Shabbat, they made up a small minion and so on. In 1 week, he passed away. A perfectly healthy man. Purim happened. He cursed them up and down. At the Mevatel Gevesen Ka'afradara. In his world, they don't exist. He wrote a will. He got sick and passed away. The whole thing is 16 days from Purim till business. He didn't pass away from typhus, no. You read the story and you see Mamish, a Yid who decides if he's going to live or not live. He says, I'm checking out of here. I'm leaving it for the Friedrich and whatever. I want no part of this. And you think that 9.5 years earlier, he said, my life isn't good? That's wonderful. Halavai, my son should have it so good. The Rebbe Rashab says, but the Bolsheviks, he's not dealing. He left it from feeding them. And like everything else, there's a precedent for it in history. The Mittler Rebbe was told in Hashemayim about the Kantanistin. Note the continence then. The gzeira of taking away little children, for 25 years of slave rape in the Russian army. In the middle, the Rebbe says, ich ken das nicht. I can't deal with it. As soon as the gzeira happened, he got sick, he passed away, and he left it for his son-in-law, the Tzemach Tzedek. I mean, in other words, the idea that Tzadik says, your job, I did what I got to do now. This is your. This is exactly what happened. The Rebbe Rashab saw the Bolsheviks. So first of all, he crushed them with his words. He crushed them and destroyed them. You're talking about a tzaddik. And then he said, okay, Rebbe, my entire Ingele, it's yours. He told the tzaddik and Rebbe, he said, this is going to be a very difficult time, and you have to be ready to give your life away. The Rebbe Rashab told his own son, you have to be ready to be Mason Nevesh HaKiddush Hashem to fight with the Bolsheviks. So he wrote his will. Friday he finished, Friday night he got sick. Battle Rifkin describes what happened each day of the week. He kept getting sicker and sicker. They brought a doctor. And the Friedrich Rebbe goes into the Rebbe and he says to the Rebbe Rashab, would he mind being examined by a doctor? And he says, if you want, let him examine me. Like, in other words, you're wasting your time. doctor, do me a favor. I'm the doctor. I'm in charge. You want to bring a doctor? Bring a doctor. So they brought in the doctor. The doctor examined the Rebbe. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. But he had this very, very high fever and was getting sicker and sicker. The Siddur Rebbe later said that he realized that whole winter, from the beginning of the year, his father was saying goodbye to him. And that there were hundreds of things that happened where the Rebbe was preparing him. He says, but it never dawned on me that such a thing could happen. It was beyond the realm of the possibility that Rebbe Rashab should pass away, should be nistalim. In any case, Motzei Shabbos Vayikra, 16 days after the Fabrengen of Purim, the Rebbe Rashab was now Mamish Goises. He was very, very, very ill. Bela Rifkin describes how the Friedrich Rebbe walked out.
Why was he there? Like, did he live in
the house? He was living in the house. He was the baby, the Bocher. He was the Rav in the house. He was the Ben Bayis. He was Mamish like family. The Friedrich Rebbe walks out of his father's bedroom. And his father is. And he grabs him. And he's crying. Tears, he says, our hearts are stone. How could we watch this? And that is absolutely, he's watching his father pass away. A Rebbe and a Rebbe. During the course of the night, they saw the Rebbe saying, Shema and Vidui. He was very, very weak. And at a certain point, his eyes were closed. The Rebbe Shab opens up his eyes and he says, Ich gehe in Himmel. Und die Gsadim lasse sich mit euch. Nehmt mir den Zawel und mir seinen Enem. That means, I'm going into the Himmel, I'm leaving you the Chsidus. Take me into the Zawel and we'll be all together. They carried the Rebbe Rashab's bed out of his bedroom into the Mishnedesh, into the shul. And all... Yeah. All Anash and Tzmimim were pushed together with the Rebbe Rashab's Hishasalza. They were in the same room. Which tells you the Hishasalza. The connection that the Rebbe felt to Chassidim and to Tzmimim. They were like his family person. And the Hergish that Chassidim felt towards the Rebbe wanted to be with everybody. They carried his bed into the Zal, and he lay there. And at a certain point, the Friedrich Rebbe became so hysterical, he started to scream, Tate! The Rebbe opened up his eyes, he looked at the Friedrich Rebbe, and he said, I mean, the tone, I don't know. The words are written down, but the trap, the music of these words, his spoilers, moichin. In other words, so much emotion, so much passion, moichin. Mind over matter. And he smiled. Those were his last words. And the Friedrich Rebbe would say later that his father lifted him up to a whole new madrege with that comment. And about 2:45 in the morning, the Rebbe Rashab was installed. And Lubavitch was crushed. There was a revolution. I'm sorry, there was a war. And there was a revolution. And then the Rebbe was gone. It was devastating. Meir Itzkin tells a story about how his father was Rav Yenneveld. You know Meir Itzkin from Eastern Parkway, yes? His father passed away when he was a little boy. And he came to his mother, to his Rebbe, to his wife, and said to her that the Rebbe is gekommen. When the Rebbe Rashab passed away, so he comes to his wife and says, the Rebbe came. So she wakes up in the morning and she tells her father, this is Meir Itkin Zeide, who was raising him, that my husband came to me and told me that everything could come in. And everyone's very happy. A few weeks later, they got word of their stalkers and as for Shtan, the Rebbe, he came in. He came and told his wife, the Rebbe came to us. He's on our side now. Could you imagine?
What, this was a dream?
Yeah, it was a dream.
Oh.
He had passed away already. He passed away as a young man. So he comes to his wife and says, his wife, the Rebbe, he came in. And we're all very happy. So she repeats it to her father. So he says, eh, chweif. And it turned out that Rebbe, he came in. So you understand yourself that the Avelis is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And what's weird about it is that during this whole week that he's sick, he's planning Pesach like as if garnished. The Rebbe Rashab knows that this is it. He made the decision. He's not living with the Russians. And he calls in Yanka Landau to go and prepare matzahs and to get the shmure. You gotta do what you gotta do. You know, if I'm not gonna bake the matzahs tomorrow, but now I gotta prepare the flour because that's what you have to do. And he goes through every, he's living like as if he's gonna live forever, knowing full well that this is it. In any case, so they have Avelis at Shiva. Shabbos, Avelis is over already. Shabbos Pashas Tav. The Friedrich Rebbe calls in Baruch Rifkin, the same Baruch Rifkin. And he says to him, the Tatat me geschrieben, as I've done Chassidus. My father wrote me that I should say Chassidus for Chassidim. He says, but I can't. Who am I? But I, to ignore my father's words, I cannot. So I'll say chassidus to you, and this will be considered like I'm saying chassidus to everybody. So they were in the cabinet, they were in the Friedrich Rebbe's office. And it was late Shabbos afternoon, it was dark, there were no lights. And the Friedrich Rebbe and this young Bacher, Baruch Rifkin, walked back and forth in the room. And the Friedrich Rebbe said his father's Maimed Eshet Gemar Malik, word for word, just like it's printed. And every once in a while he would stop and give commentary, explain it. And then he would again quote from the Maimon, word for word the Maimon, and he said, Baruch Rifkin was very excited about this, because saying Chassidus is a simon of becoming a Rebbe. So he made sure that the door was open, that people should be able to pass by and poke in their heads. So one of the elder Chassidim, Reb Shmuel Gerardi, was from the Choshev Chassidim of the Rebbe Rashab and from the Rebbe Rashiet, pokes in his nose. He sees what's going on, and Baruch Rifkin was like motion, like, come on in. So he came and he stood by the door. I feel like I never saw him and didn't ask him to leave. This was a very, very positive sign that there's going to be a Hemshech, that the Friedrich Rebbe is going to be the Mamal Makom success. One week after, this is what it was. Friedrich Rebbe became a Rebbe, and this was the Nachom of Chassidim. And the Friedrich Rebbe started to write letters. And all of the letters he refers to himself as Ben Melchem Verabchem, the son of the Rebbe. And the younger Chassidim, they immediately connect themselves to Friedrich Rebbe. The older Chassidim had a much harder time. In fact, there were certain Chassidim that Friedrich Rebbe says, I'm asking you, please help me. Not as a Rebbe, but as the son of your Rebbe. Please, as the son of your Rebbe, please help me. And then the Friedrich Rebbe got sick. Almost a few months after he became there, Friedrich Rebbe got sick. And he was very, very ill. He was very close to Hepech HaChaim, and he taka had typhus. And there was also, you know, one calamity, one tragedy, one patch, one clap after another. And during the period of this illness, the famous story with the Rav Chava occurred, which I suppose you probably know. The Rav Chava was a great god. And although the Rav Chava was really not a chassid, the Rav Chava was his own man. The Rav Chava did what he wanted. But if he had a loyalty, it was Chabad. He used to go to the Kapos Terebe, which was a different branch of Chabad, which had since folded, and he was very close to Friedrich Rebbe. He was older than the Rebbe Rashab. He was older than the Friedrich Rebbe's father. Nevertheless, even for the Friedrich Rebbe, he had great respect. He used to call him the Nasi. And the Lagachava was a man who had no respect to anybody. In fact, Mavatel ran element. I mean, he once took a sefer from one of the greatest Achreinim, from the greatest Lamdim in the last 300 years. He put it in a cradle, and he shook it and said, Shashasha, Reinist. That's okay, yeah. But Friedrich Rebbe was 22 years younger than him. And the Rebbe Rashab wrote a letter, and he says in this letter that I'm paskening with my Keach HaTeira that the Friedrich Rebbe has to have a Rafua Shlema. And he did. And then from that point forward, the Friedrich Rebbe used to refer to the Rebbe Rashab as the Sava Teira, the owner, the possessor of the Teira. And there's another story, I'll share another story, which is gathered brought out of the name of someone by the last name, Chanan. that in 1921 the Rogachev came to Rostov and he went into the Friedrich Hilem. The Rogachev was a legend in his lifetime. He developed the Rogachev. He walked into the chaser, the courtyard in front of the Friedrich Hilem's apartment, and all the Bochum came over to him, gave him shalom, and they asked him, "Was the Gaon gekommen? Why did the Gaon come?" "Ich bin gekommen geben smicha dem Rebbe. I came to give the Rebbe smicha." Now, if somebody else would say it, you'd slap him in the face. But the Rogachev could say it. So they went and they told the Rebbe that the Rogachev is here. So the Friedrich Hilem came running out of his room, his makabel panov. They went into a room, they spent 4 hours alone. Nobody knows what they discussed. But when he walked out, he said, "Yidden davn hob ma nosi." Jews need a nosi. The word nosi, you know, nosi nesidereinu, the one who phrased a Rebbe as a nosi, where did the term nosi come from? The Rebbe used to use it all the time. The first one to use the word nosi about the Rebbeim was the Rogachev. And he didn't mean it like we do, as Hasidish. He meant it pashut as halacha. He was a Goan, a Lamdan. And in his mind, a Rebbe is a Nasi. It's not just a Rav or a Rosh Hashiv, he's a Nasi. He didn't have a Nasi. The Jews need to be a Nasi. Right? Ubefrat azer is Roy, especially that he's worthy. Chosnei koidem ukaladim, the son-in-law precedes everybody else. Benoi koidem ukaladim, a son comes before everybody else. And the Rebbe tells the Paskin, and the Friedrich Rebbe is a Nasi. But it was curious. That's what he said. This were his words. A son-in-law preceded everybody else. A son preceded everybody else. And remained a great mystery. Until the Rebbe. And the Friedrich Rebbe was nostalgic. And the Rebbe, by the way, was not married to the Rebbe since then. And the Rebbe was Chosnei. People wrote that maybe the Rogachev, whether he meant it or he had the Ruach HaKodesh, words came from his, from the Eibishter. The Chosnei Kodem Kolodem was an allusion to Friedrich and Abedim, the face of the Rebbe. This is the Malmach. And the Friedrich Rebbe became the Rebbe, and the rest is history. Friedrich Rebbe started to build Lubavitch, and the Bolsheviks started to destroy Yiddishkeit. And the Friedrich Rebbe realized that if he's not going to do, nothing's going to happen. And what his father said, Halavai Zol Yesef Yitzchus, and Azei Gut, was fulfilled and materialized unbelievably. I just want to tell you another little detail. During the period of the Friedrich Rebbe's illness, he had very, very high fever. And he was delirious. What delirious means? He was speaking, mumbling incoherently. So they ran and they called Yankel Landau. Harav Yankel Landau, the Rebbe of Bnei Berak. Yankel Landau was a great Goan. And he also, like Beryl Rifkin, like Harav Beryl Rifkin, were very close to him. They lived in the house. And Yankel Landau was called to look at the Friedrich Rebbe, to see how ill he was. And they heard him mumbling and muttering words that seemed incoherent. So he said, "Das Retter von Hitz." He's speaking from the fever. He's so much fever that he's not being rational. When the Friedrich Rebbe became better, he called him in, and he said, "Hayitachem, al dem taten zachosid ken azei reden as dem taten zakind." He asked him, "How could it be that a chosid of my father should be able to speak this way about my father's son?" In other words, he didn't tell him. In other words, Friedrich Rebbe heard him. In his delirium, in his hiss, he heard what he said. "How could you suspect me, not because of who I am, but because of who my father is, that I should be subject to this kind of delirium?" And while I'm telling you stories, I'll tell you another story. Yankel Landau was very cautious from the Rebbe's message, very attached to the Rebbe. He actually tried, he wrote a letter to the Rebbe Rashab, and he went to the Oyel in the start. He was 22, 23 years old. He says to the Rebbe, "I am asking a bracha that I should die and that I should be buried within 50 amos of the Rebbe Rashab." A few days later, the Friedrich Rebbe is by the Oyel, and the Friedrich Rebbe calls him and says, "Yankel, the Tate gesorgt auf Herrn Steiden Narischkeiten." My father is not right in Narischkeiten. Okay, nu, wie man sagt, in der Welt, der Chusam Yad Nemo Lehm. Okay, nu, man chai kosher v'sameach.